Hi guys, and welcome to the You Were Made For More podcast.
Thank you so much for being with us. Our heart here yearns for teens to know that they are valued, loved, and created for a purpose. Currently, our culture is feeding the younger generation so many lies, telling them that they are defined by what others say about them, how they perform, what they have to offer to others, or even how they fit a certain image or a certain picture. The truth speaks of a completely different narrative. Our identities are found in one thing, and that one thing changes everything: Jesus. That's a powerful, transformative statement. When this idea gets from our heads to our hearts, it shifts how we live, what we believe, and how we do relationships with others. Our mission is to consistently speak about the abundant life that is freely offered to us, because we have seen and believe that when teenagers know what they are worth and whose they are, they will be more inclined to live for Jesus, following his commandments and walking in his ways. God says that you are valued, loved, and created for a purpose, and that changes everything. The You Were Made For More podcast hosts conversations on tough relational topics while connecting ideas about relationships, identity, and the gospel in profound ways that encourage critical thinking as we navigate the world around us. We aim to always point back to the hope that we have because we were made for more. Hi friends, welcome to this episode of the You Were Made For More podcast. My name is Sammy Gallo. I'm your host, the creator of Abundant Life, You Were Made For More, and like I mentioned, the host of this podcast. Today's episode is going to be a conversation with Emma Waters. And Emma's life has radiated the C.S. Lewis quote about putting first things first and God will take care of the rest. Emma is the author of a new book called Lead Like J.L., a book that is essentially a how-to guide for women about how to live in a world after feminism, a world that honors women and also gives us space to use the gifts that God has given us in the specific seasons that we are in. And what I love about Emma's book, and you'll hear me talk about this multiple times in the interview, is that she offers really practical steps for women to do this in their daily lives, for women to honor the Lord, honor who God made them, and go after what he has for them in the season that they're in, and be faithful to those things, right? That's all that God really asks of us, is to be faithful with what we have, and he will do the rest. To be faithful with what we're given, and he will take care of the rest. And often, so, he does it more than we could imagine, right? He doesn't just meet the need, he surpasses it. And that's what Emma's life has been about. That's what her testimony is about. All the while she's pointing to Christ and her salvation in him. And I'm really excited for you to hear this conversation. I'm really excited for you to get your hands on her book. You can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I will link all of that in the show notes for you guys, but for now, tune in. I hope you enjoy this conversation with me and Emma.
Amen.
All right, so Emma, can you kind of just we're gonna jump in and I kind of ask like all our guests at the beginning to just tell me like a short Spark Notes version of who you are. So like where can we find you on a daily basis? What is your family life like? What are you all about? Just to kind of give us a good picture of who you are.
Yes, absolutely. So I am living outside of Pittsburgh right now with my husband and our two daughters. We have a third little girl on the way who will be here at the end of summer.
Oh,
So,
three girls. That's so exciting.
yeah, we are so excited. My husband is full time in seminary at Trinity Anglican Seminary. And so our day-to-day life is a really fun, flexible mix. I work remote still for a think tank in DC doing federal policy on a host of issues related to family policy, women's issues, infertility, things in that space. But it's very much remote, and we pursue it on a very flexible basis to allow me to still be present with our girls throughout the day, which is always a huge blessing. And yeah, I've been working with Anglicans for Life in the, over the last like year and a half since moving here with their Anglican Bioethics Center. So we've been doing a lot of work helping helping structure the way that pastors and Christians should think through some of the most crucial questions about what it means to be human today. And that's been a huge blessing. But aside from that, my sister's living with us now. And so we've had the most fun just like spending time with her and in our local community, involved in our church, things like that. So it's a really fun season of like young kids, family time, and you know, some work thinking about the issues of what it means to be a woman and what it means to be human today.
That is so awesome. Yeah. So, for just so our listeners know, Emma and I got connected because obviously Abundant Life is a project of Anglicans for Life. And Georgette is my boss, and she had great things to say about Emma. Emma, you actually wrote a book recently, and Georgette had sent that book to me, asked me to read it and kind of like digest your wisdom that you put into that and all the work you put into that. And after, while I was in it, I was like, I have to have Emma on the podcast to talk about this. So that's why she's here. But I kind of want to, yeah, like now that we know a little bit about who you are, where you are on a daily basis, obviously, like little kids is a, demanding season. I'm in it too. I have four little kids, and it's like you barely have any time to parent well, work well, pour into your marriage, pour into your community. Like there's so many demands. And I think that that is something that young people really struggle with is like, what am I supposed to put my time and energy into? And what's the Lord calling me to do? Like, what does this look like for me? I don't really want to sacrifice certain things, you know, that like the culture tells me is important. There's so many things being spoken to young people about success and worth and all of those things. So can you tell me a little bit about your book? What inspired you to write it? Obviously, for our listeners, like I'm gonna link her book in the show notes and encourage you to read it. It was a blessing to me, but I kind of want to hear like from you, Emma, what inspired you to write it and what's the heart behind it?
Yes, and that is the perfect setup. So, my book, Lead Like JL, Seven Timeless Principles for Today's Women of Faith, just came out earlier this year in March. And I suppose that should have made it into the Spark Notes version. But yeah, so I decided to write Lead Like JL over the last year or two because I was finding that more and more when I was going and speaking at events or college campuses or even at some congressional briefings with staff, increasingly half the questions people would have would deal with one of the policy areas I was working on, IVF or infertility, something in that space. But more and more, the other half of the questions were just based on very practical, real life things like, how do I get married? What does it mean to date? What does it mean to be a mother? Like, how are you a mother? You still work? How do you balance these things? And questions just about, like, you know, it seems really hopeless between men and women right now. The divide is greater than ever. How are we supposed to think about this and approach this? And those weren't policy questions. Those were just real life questions about trying to navigate where our culture has gone and where religion has gone, especially for younger men and women. I'm a member of Gen Z, so I'm in the younger adult category. And Gen Z in particular, I think we've really seen a lot of movement for better and for worse on this front. So a couple of years ago, I wrote an article for a journal, sort of diving into different issues around this question of like, what does it mean to be a woman, and how do we think about things like girl boss feminism? And so, girl boss feminism is this career-oriented model of success that says to be a woman and to be successful, you need to compete and outcompete with men. You should be pursuing every glass ceiling you can in the corporate sphere or in your own area of work, and your career success is really the thing that defines you and makes you a woman. And so, if there's anything that you're going to do, at least succeed professionally. And so, this career-first mindset, I think, is one side of the culture script that so many young women in particular are being fed and have been fed for decades at this point. And on the other hand, since COVID, when everyone was sent home and life just took on a very different flavor for a couple of years, we saw the rise of this online tradwife movement really come into the mainstream discussion. And the tradwife movement, by contrast, was, I think, in many ways, an equally rigid vision of what it means to be a woman. But instead of defined by career success, it was defined by things like domesticity and homemaking. Many of the trad wives are married and do have children, but certainly not all of them do. And this is where you get the memes of wearing your prairie dress, your apron, walking barefoot out in the field, homesteading. And while I'm very sympathetic to many aspects of the tradwife movement, I think there's like a lot of like very positive indicators that it's pointing to. Ultimately, working on a homestead and being a tradwife and like that very online sense is actually maybe not what most women want. It isn't actually attainable for most women. And so it struck me that we're in a really interesting moment where the two conversations offered to women are either be a career first girl boss, or you can be this like reject all things career trad wife. And they're both very rigid. They both tend to pit work against the family, in their own unique ways. And I think ultimately neither of them are actually answering the deeper questions that women have about how do you actually navigate and orient your life and time, given all of these competing demands, et cetera. So the approach that I took in Lead Like JL was really making the case for a seasonal approach to life that puts first things first. So recognizing, right, like if you're not married or you don't have kids, like your life is going to look very different than if you're a mom with young kids, which is very much my season, or if you're an older woman whose kids have left the home. And so instead of prescribing like a single vision of to be a successful woman is X, what does it actually look like to dive deep into the Bible and say, who were all of the incredible, faithful, and wise women that we see depicted? And what can we learn from their stories? And then how do we apply that to our season? And so ultimately, the goal is how do you be faithful to the season the Lord has placed you in, not the season that you wish that you were in? So I know a lot of like younger women who really desire to be married and desire to be mothers, but they're not right now. And so they have to fight the temptation of like just sort of like bemoaning that reality and like not working very hard and like not really making the most of the time or the jobs or the career opportunities they have because they just want to be married. So they're like, well, it doesn't really matter what I do day to day until I get married. My life hasn't begun. And that in its own way, I think is really unhealthy because you're actually not building habits of excellence that will prepare you well for that season. And then on the other hand, I know so many women who are in that season of marriage and even motherhood, and they feel the temptation to put career first, even if that means putting their kids in daycare full time and making a lot of decisions that actually undermine the well-being and flourishing of your child, and in many ways tend to undermine your ability to be fully present in the home through hospitality and pouring into your marriage and in your local community. And so also wanting to bring a very like loving but firm word to women in that season and say, like, okay, like the Lord has put you here. This is a great blessing. And actually, marriage and motherhood and the responsibilities of your home are not holding you back from what God has called you to, but it's actually the very way that the Lord is working in and through you, as a blessing in this season, but also to prepare you for whatever else the Lord has. And that should actually fill us with lots of hope and purpose, even in the very long days and long nights of that season.
Yeah, I think this is such an important conversation because I think, right, like, my next question to you is gonna go off of what I'm about to say, but like, as a woman listening to you who is now in her 30s, like, who went back to nursing school so that I could have more time with my kids at home, like, that's part of my story. And Then I had a son who has a rare genetic condition and requires 24/7 care at home. And I have fought so many of these feelings. Like, what does it look like? Obviously, to like use these passions that I have and use the gifts that I've been given, but like also these are responsibilities that I've been handed and that I've actually prayed for. Like I've prayed to be married, I've prayed to have children, and now it's like the culture is like in my sinful nature, honestly, is like you're saying, putting them at odds with one another, So I think that's very natural as you move from season to season, like very normal feelings. But what you're talking about is like being equipped to deal with those feelings, right? And having tools to be able to do whatever season you're in with excellence. And that's so important. And I think you're right. Like your lead, like JL, does a great job of outlining scripture and these different women in scripture who are real and lived real lives. Like I think a lot of the times people lose sight of that, like they're like it's a story and it's not real, but it is. Those women were real and they lived r very real lives and had a lot of the same raw and real feelings that we have today. So my next question going off of this is like obviously you are a successful woman. You have passions that have driven where your career has gone. You also have answered prayers, I'm sure, of meeting your husband and being married and having two beautiful girls and now another one on the way. What has submission looked like for you in a lot of ways? And give me like a practical way that you've kind of worked through some of those feelings in your own life.
Yeah, this is a great question. And just reflecting on your remarks, I think there's such a beauty in the intentionality of the Lord that, like, He gave you a passion and gifting for nursing school. And that was actually one of the ways He equipped you to care for your son, who then was going to
Yes.
have way more needs than, like, maybe the average child does. And, like, the
Yeah.
way that, like, your heart was already there and the Lord, like, gave you the opportunities to start growing in that. Like, it's so beautiful, like, the ways that the Lord just prepares us. And then imagine, like, the way that you're now equipped to speak to other women and other moms and families who are walking through the same thing with both like the medical understanding but also like the practical lived experience. Like that's just such a beautiful testimony of the Lord's goodness there and the way that He's informing you in this season in ways that like are going to bear fruit way beyond, I think, even like what you can imagine right now. So this is a really good question. So I opened the book with this story, and I think it's been the blueprint in many ways of how my life has gone. But when I was in college, my now husband, but then boyfriend, and I had met, fallen in love madly, and started talking about marriage. And then the C word or children came up, and I had what can only be described as just a complete meltdown. And all of a sudden, just felt this like overwhelming sense of fear and dread that somehow children would be the end of my life, or would sort of ruin my life. And this is, I think, unexpected even to me at the time. So I was raised in a very conservative Christian household. I'm the oldest of a handful of siblings, babysat all the time. Like, I wasn't unfamiliar with or scared of children. But to some pretty great degree, I think I had really taken in the world's definition of success and really been swimming in the waters of girl boss feminism, even at a Christian university, where all of a sudden it was like, well, I've been working so hard academically. I was graduating valedictorian. I had all of these internships lined up. And I was like, and this idea of getting married and just having kids feels like such a letdown after all of these years. And which was an incredibly like ungodly, unbiblical way of thinking about it. But that was like very much the emotional response I had at the time. And so after a couple of months of just sort of unproductive conversations, going back and forth on the issue, and like, mind you, my husband wasn't saying, when we get married, we're having kids right away and you have to stay home and can't do anything. Like, he literally never said anything close to that. But in my mind, I was like, it's all over. And so I broke up with him very much on a whim. And almost immediately just regretted it significantly as like one of the most foolish things that I had done. And realized though that, like, in having done this, like, we couldn't just get back together, like, nothing had happened. I had broken up with him, and that this was really an opportunity to dive deep into what the Bible says about what it means to be a woman, a wife, a mother, etc. And I had a mentor that came to me at the time, and thankfully, she had the courage and the love to be very honest with me. And she said, "Well, Emma, either you're right that children are going to ruin your life, or the Bible's right that children are a blessing to your life and the per one of the purposes of marriage. But you can't both be right." And I was like, "Oh no, I've really gotten this so wrong." And I just realized, like, in that moment, how far I had veered from what the Bible actually says about these things and how much work I had to do to really come to understand and submit to God's word when it comes to the blessing of children as an actual blessing and something that we should be open to in marriage, not something I should artificially delay for 10 years while I pursue my career. Like, something about that was actually very misordered, or disordered. And so, long story short, the Lord did a lot of work on my heart. We ended up getting back together. But in the process of getting back together, we had set up a time to meet at the end of the semester because we were at different schools. And we picked the weekend about a month in advance. We were planning to meet, and I had applied for a host of spring internships. This is my senior year of college. Spring internships can, set you up for your job in DC or wherever you're going. I'd applied to a ton of places that fall and hadn't heard back from anyone, which I thought was kind of weird, but I was like, okay, maybe I'm not as competitive as I thought. Who knows? And finally, one internship location reached out to me, and they were like, okay, we'd love to hire you. You'd be a great fit. The only caveat is you have to come to a leadership training weekend in December. And it was the exact same weekend that I had set aside to meet with my ex-boyfriend, now husband. And it was this, like, beautiful moment of, like, Lord, you could not be more on the nose right now of, like, the same weekend that I have set aside to meet with a guy that I really want to get back together with and get married to is the same weekend the only internship that has reached out to me has offered me a slot if I go to this training in another state. And there was, like, literally no way to do both. And given how long distance we were, there was no easy way just to shift a day and it'd be no big deal. Like, it was one or the other. And so I very much had this conviction of, like, no, like, I broke up with him because I wanted to put my career first. And this is an opportunity to say no to this internship and risk not having literally any internships for the entire spring semester. But maybe hopefully to get back together with him and get married. And so I said no to the internship, met up with him. That ended up being a really great encouragement to him to show that I was very sincere and not just emotionally flip-flopping. We got back together, and I still had no internships lined up for the spring. And then 2 days after that, I had two of the top internships in my field reach out to me and offer me locations, or offer me spots on their team. And it was this, like, beautiful moment, in the words of C.S. Lewis, that when we put first things first, God gives us the second and is so generous to bless those second things. But if we put second things first, we miss out on both first and second things. And I genuinely do believe, like, I may not have actually gotten back together with him if I had asked to, like, change weekends. And I would have accepted an internship, but it definitely would have been a subpar internship, to say the least. And I've seen this pattern play out so many times in my life where every time I've taken a step forward with our family and therefore a step back from work, the Lord has just been kind to bless me and bless, like, the work that I'm doing, even in small ways where I had our first daughter, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not going back into the office full time. I'll go in a couple hours a week, but otherwise, like, I want to be home with her and be present. And it felt like the Lord just, like, blessed my time and efforts way more than before. And it was like new doors were opening I would not have expected. My husband felt a call to in-person seminary, leaving Washington, D.C., moving to Pittsburgh. And so, submitting to his call and submitting to him and leaving Washington, D.C., right as President Trump came into office. And if you're a Republican or you're a conservative, that's, like, the dream time of life where, like, you've worked, however many years in the wilderness to have that level of, like, political opportunity in front of you. And yet at the same time, seeing the ways that the Lord has just opened so many doors, and blessed my work, where, like, last year I was on the cover of the New York Times twice for work that I was doing as a stay-at-home mom in Pittsburgh. And it was, like, so ironic where I was like, literally, Lord, what are you doing? Like, this is not something that I, like, pursued, and yet here we are. And so, like, it's just, like, this beautiful pattern. And it doesn't always have to be, like, the New York Times, right? But it's just this beautiful pattern of, like, seeing the ways that, like, When you submit to the callings and responsibilities of that season, submitting to your husband, submitting to the Lord will find ways to just generously bless those efforts because there's no one who is more generous than the Lord, in any scenario.
That's so good. What a beautiful testimony. Like, that is truly, I'm sure at the time when you were in college, like, wow, I really desire this relationship, but I also like really need a job and an internship, right? Like, that was not an easy decision to make. And now looking back, you can be like, okay, the Lord clearly blessed that and gave you far beyond what you could even imagine to happen. But at the time, and that's something I want to highlight, like at the time in whatever situation anyone is facing between like two difficult decisions like that, right? Like that's a very hard to trust in the Lord. And like that, and it sounds wrong to say that, but it is really hard to be like, okay, Lord, I'm gonna like release my grip on this thing and like give it to you and trust that you're gonna do way more than I could do with it. But like, how awesome, like your testimony, that is just beautiful. And I think a story to others that whenever you do that, it might not look exactly how you want it to look, right? Or how you think it's going to look, but he is going to bless it, whether it's immediate or it takes a few years, you know, like submitting and honoring those things do bring blessing, whether they're how we think they're gonna look or not. So thank you for sharing. That's just an awesome testimony to the Lord's goodness and how he's worked in your life through hard decisions and submission to him and things like that. Okay, so my last question for you is about your book specifically, because I kind of want to give listeners like a little teaser of which you've already done a good job of, but something I had never heard about before reading your book was the tent peg strategy. Can you give us like a little teaser of what that is and like practically what it could look like in your life? And again, I'm gonna encourage everyone, like after you hear Emma's response, get her book. It's on Amazon, at Target, like several different retailers, and kind of like dive in more to what this is. But if you could kind of briefly outline that, that would be awesome.
Yes, of course. Okay, so in the world of marketing, there's something called a tent pole strategy. And so this has to do with the concept of how if you want any sort of like business, career, personal life, like what have you strategy to succeed, you need to have these firmly planted concepts and goals and understandings of who you are and what you're trying to accomplish. And so it's basically just a way of organizing, like, here are like my main priorities, and it's all upholding this one bigger vision or goal that I have. So as we've discussed, like my book is named Lead Like JL, and JL is this really fascinating character in Judges 4 and 5 in the Old Testament. And her story comes at us in the middle of yet another war between Israel and the Canaanites, where she very infamously invites in, or well, is asked to invite in the general of the Canaanites, the enemy of God's people. He asks for some water, she gives him some milk, and the moment he falls asleep, she takes a wooden tent peg and mallet and drives it through his skull, thus soundly defeating Israel's enemy. So a sort of like a tongue-in-cheek, playful play on the whole marketing strategy. Every chapter in my book ends with these tent peg strategies, or these like very practical tools for putting into practice the concepts that we talk about in every chapter. So I have 7 chapters, and they're looking not at an exhaustive list of all of the principles or virtues, but certainly 7 of the ones that I think are most lacking or under attack for women today. So they include discernment, shrewdness, resourcefulness, hospitality, marriage as battle mates rather than a battle of the sexes, motherhood as a form of warfare, and then the role of older women as matriarchs and wise counselors in our lives. And so each of those chapters ends with very practical takeaways where we've talked about the biblical concept and the story of a couple of women in the Bible who really illustrate it. We've talked about the cultural applications. And then my goal with the book is to really be a hands hands-on guide where you as an individual or in a small group or between you and your mentor or you and your mom, whatever the situation is, can really dig deep and say, okay, what are practical things that I could be doing today to implement these in my life? Because I think in many cases, you can read a book that like tells you lots of true things, but if you're still lacking that like necessary connection piece of, okay, how do I bring this into my own life? Then it's going to be a lot harder to apply it and to really start engaging in the concepts in a deeper way. And so that was the tent peg strategy, sort of in a nutshell, is helping people bridge that connection, but take the biblical lessons and the stories that we're diving into, from discernment to resourcefulness to marriage, and really begin exploring that ourselves and in our own lives. Because I think that's, one of the most crucial things that we're called to today. And obviously the story of JL is but one of the women that I talk about. I cover Deborah and Esther and Sarah and Elizabeth and Miriam and so many other great women throughout the Bible. But hers is just such a provocative and unexpected example of what it means to be a faithful woman, where you see feminists on the one hand who try to claim her as an example of like retaking the patriarchy. She subverted the time. And in reality, what you actually see is a woman who is being very faithful to her day-to-day responsibilities, because setting up and taking down tents was a feminine domestic duty. Mm-hmm. So the only way that she was equipped to defeat Israel's enemy when he literally came knocking on her door was because she had been faithful to the daily task of like maintaining her home and being a good wife, mm-hmm. and a faithful wife, right? And I thought that was just such a beautiful vision of the way that the Lord works through these ordinary responsibilities and callings in our life to do such extraordinary work. And so the tent pegs are not like profound philosophical concepts. They're like very practical things you should do day to day, because it turns out the Lord is the one who actually works in our daily faithfulness, not in these quote great moments where we do quote great things for God. But it's actually through the fruit of what we're investing day to day. And that's what we should actually really be pointing ourselves to, pointing other women to when we're having these conversations.
So good. Yeah. And I think that's like why I love your book so much, and why I'm like, again, gonna push people to get it and read it, is because I think like the practicality is what this generation is missing, right? Like, even women in the church, like up here, know, I want to be faithful to God. I want to be faithful to my family. I want to use my passions. I want to do all of these things. How do I do that? And either like they don't know who to talk to, they don't know where to look, they don't know how to do it practically. And I think your book does a great job of giving women questions to think about, things to pray through. Like this would be a great book to do with a women's group in your church, you know, of women in different seasons of life. Like, what does this look like in your life as a single woman, as a married woman with no children yet, a married mom with young kids, a single mom, you know, like there are so many different areas and categories where this can fit. And I think, yeah, you just do a great job of that. And the Lord has like given you a gift in speaking that. So thank you so much for sharing your heart, your wisdom, and everything that you poured into this book with us. I really hope that anyone who listened to this at least was encouraged by your story and convicted to maybe seek what that looks like in their own life, and what it can look like to submit maybe like one piece of your life that you're holding really tightly to, and what blessing could come from that. So thank you, Emma. I'm excited for you and the third little girl. That's so exciting. And I know that you will continue to see God's blessing in your family and as you follow him and in your work too. So just thank you for sharing with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on today. This was wonderful.